Well, Jay is our temporary chair, and I don't think he can figure out how to get over here.
Me see if I can just assign him manually. Not sure I can.
Thanks, Ben. You saved me.
Oh,
Like, how do I get into my room? What's going on here?
like you might have been trapped outside the room.
Cool. So we've got Jim, Serena, Maggie, Tisha, and Lori, I guess, for as commissioners for this group. Has everybody joined a group? This point, I think probably so. I think I was maybe the last person. Okay, y'all. So I don't know where we want to start. I mean, one of the things that we need to do is formalize a name, but I wonder if maybe we want to talk first about what exactly it is that we want this group to do. I know we talked about it some last time. And I was going to try and bring up my notes just to see some of the topics that we landed on. Does anybody have any thoughts about what we want this group to focus on? I mean, I kind of feel like in some senses, this group is replacing equitable housing solutions, because we talked a lot about development related issues. In that group, obviously the other group is talking more about advocacy and communication and education, which I think is more of a kind of a public facing subcommittee or ideas more kind of getting the word out to the public. So I don't know what are y'all's ideas about particularly based on the fact that last year we really focused on homelessness, obviously, and then before that, I think Jim really kind of led us down the road for looking at affordable housing and what to do. Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
So, I mean, I'm still, I'm going to forever be focused on how do we create more housing. I think we set a goal of the city of 15,000 units by the year 2030. And to get there, we need to be developing about 600 units a year. And right now we're not getting anywhere close to that. There was a bond allocation drawing today for the 4% tax credits, and I don't think the city of Tucson had a single project in the bond allocation. This is two in a row. So there was the first bond allocation was in January. It was like 420 million. This one was 350 million, and there were 19 projects submitted. I don't think Tucson had a single one. So that's a huge problem for us as a city. I think we've been doing a good job getting the 9%, but the 9% tax credits target a lower level of income. They tend to be smaller projects. So they typically target people who are 50, 60% of AMI, 40% of AMI. They're really low income. The 4% tax credits are below market rate rents, but they target 80% AMI. And they tend to be much larger projects. They're typically 200 to 300. Sometimes I've seen even projects that are 500 units. They are big projects. There's a lot of housing. So, the last one that got awarded in Tucson was Lariat Village. It's under construction right now. But that one was able to work because they stacked the 4% tax credit with the state low-income housing tax credit. And the state low-income housing tax credit has since been sunset. The issue in Tucson, and I've talked about this before, but it's a real issue, is that Our area median incomes are about 20% below Phoenix, and our costs are about the same level, maybe a little bit higher than Phoenix to build. And so projects, they just can't pencil here right now without some sort of help. And it's crazy to me that we're not getting these types of projects because I think we have a bigger need in a lot of ways than Phoenix for them. And I think it's going to take the mayor talking to the governor. You know, of course, this is an election year, so I don't know that anything's going to really happen this year for the governor. But I mean, something needs to change at a state level to allow some of those tax credits to come here. So whatever, you know, so rules or regulations are in place where they you know, like Casa Grande can use Maricopa County's incomes to calculate their projects. You know, there's a push now to restart the state tax credit, but it's only for rural communities, so it wouldn't be eligible for Pima and Maricopa counties. It just feels like there's a lot of momentum and there's a lot of things that people are trying to do right now at a state level, but Tucson is kind of getting left in the sidelines, and we need to advocate. You know, we need to have a voice at the state level to get our fair share, and that's what I've always advocated for, is I want to see the fair share of tax credits come to Tucson. You know, we've had $750 million of 4% tax credits allocated statewide. Tucson should be receiving, what was it? I forgot, 14% of that. And we're getting zero this year. And that's a big problem for us as a city. And I think, you know, if there's anything I think that this group should be focused on is, you know, what needs to change at a state level? And what does the city need to be advocating for to change at a state level to get that money to flow here? So we have more of that middle income projects happening in Tucson. So that's my 2 cents. I'll get off my soapbox.
Lori, I see your hand, but before that, I just was going to ask Jim. That makes a lot of sense to me. I just was going to ask you, if that is one of the things that this subcommittee takes on. Do you have any thoughts? Sorry, do you have any thoughts about, how this group could work to, advocate for necessary changes? Because it does sound like what you're saying is there needs to be some state level changes. So, do you have any thoughts about what this group could potentially do?
Could we maybe can before we get there, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think my question is kind of pertinent, just because I want to understand more about the development side. Jim, that's your work every day, and so you're really familiar with it. And I'm really familiar with nonprofits and worked at a nonprofit for a very long time that had an affordable housing complex that was built with tax credits. And we had the hardest time maintaining that property because, so I don't know if this is part of the problem why folks are not applying for these tax credit properties, is that you have to have someone who's willing to manage the complex, right? And you have to have staff to do that, and you have to have money for repairs and things like that. And it's virtually impossible for nonprofits to have that kind of money. It's really difficult. And so I wonder if that's part of the problem, is that it's not just about the actual cost of building, which I'm sure are astronomical, but that you have to partner with someone who's willing to deliver the services. And that's really hard when you're in a nonprofit because it's a lot of money required.
Yeah, I think that's a separate issue. I don't think people are not doing development here because they're worried about recurring maintenance costs. Those recurring maintenance costs go up over time. I mean, recently insurance has become a major issue, where insurance costs they've gone up 300% in the last like 2 or 3 years.
But also staffing. Now, I don't just mean costs, I mean staffing as well, right?
Well, there are third party group companies, there's third party property management companies that do that. I mean, most of the for-profit developers that I work for have a third party property management company that does that for them and make sure they have all the compliance stuff in place. So it doesn't have to be done in-house.
So, I mean, that sounds like two issues right there that, obviously this subcommittee could explore, right? The development side, Jim, that you're talking about, and then Lori, potentially the, maintenance side and kind of what's going on there. I don't think we've talked about that a whole lot as a commission. So, it seems like certainly something that could be ripe for, what we work on and explore, as a subcommittee. So those
Yeah,
are, yeah.
the only other thing I wanted to say about this is, our political system in a lot of ways is broken right now. We have a House and a Senate who are anti-affordable housing because we have a governor that's in the opposing party that's pro-affordable housing. And so there is a group of people in the House right now who are actively trying to kill all affordable housing in the state of Arizona. And so, it's a statewide problem, and we may just be beating our heads against the wall trying to do something about it, because frankly, it's a lot bigger than us, and it's a lot bigger than the city of Tucson. But I think the first thing that we can do is, if we get a couple of developers who understand how to do pro formas and how to underwrite these deals, help us look at what are the levers, what are the things that could change at a state level to make Tucson more competitive, educate mayor and council, and then have them advocate at the state level for these changes. I think that would be, I guess, what I would propose.
Makes sense. Maggie?
I think I would like to see us focus a little bit more on home ownership, and all that that entails. I think that, we talk a lot about affordable housing, but not about home ownership. And right now, I have to say that even though rates are still high, prices are still high. Right now, listed for sale, there's more inventory than demand. So it's actually a buyer's market. So if it's, what happens is that, especially our low to moderate income households don't come to the party until everybody and their mother does, and then it becomes a, then it becomes a seller's market. Right now, there are ample opportunities for that. Wish funds just came out for down payment. I think the city is hopefully getting closer to approving their down payment assistance or get it through the attorneys. But we have some programs, but it's, I think it's got to be prioritized. I think there's a really good opportunity for low moderate income households to purchase right now. And I think that's how we create wealth, right? So.
Hey, Maggie, there was the Pima County IDA did receive a $35 million bond allocation today. Are you aware of that?
No, I'm not.
So my understanding is that is to help for home ownership. I think that I don't exactly understand. I was talking to Dre about it a little bit ago. But that was the one thing that did come to Pima County was through the IDA. And I think it was to help. I'm not exactly sure how bonds help with home ownership, but that's what she said, something along those lines, but I don't really understand it.
It might be through like mortgages and the programs like that Dre has been doing, but is it the county or the city? Not the city,
It
correct?
was Pima County. There's a Pima County IDA.
Okay. I'll look into that. But yeah, I did not know.
I mean, I think, another, piece of the puzzle is talking about how to, expand community land trusts. I mean, obviously that's what you're doing, Maggie, but I think there's way more room for, that kind of model to to flourish in Pima County. I mean, particularly when you're talking about low to moderate income borrowers. So, if you're not advocating for more land trust stuff going on, I certainly would do so. I see Ben, your hand is up. Go ahead, Ben.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if it's appropriate for me to comment since I'm not a commission member or not.
Yeah, no, I think it's perfectly fine.
Okay, for what it's worth, and I'm representing the Southern Arizona Home Builders Association and the Arizona Multi-Housing Association today. I just got a PR or a notice from our public relations department. Two-bedroom rent for apartments in Phoenix have dropped 3.2%, 4.6% in Scottsdale, 6.4% in Chandler, 7.6% in Tempe, and 8.3% in Glendale. And it's just economics 101 is supply and demand. I mean, those municipalities are facilitating building up there. And from an industry perspective, I mean, to Maggie's point, last figure I saw coming out of PTSD was the single family building permits are down 50% this year. 50%. So it's just not getting built in the city anymore. And that's a huge factor here. And I mean, we saw impact fees go up again this year. PTSD's raised their rates now, going for the second time in 2 years. I've had a major developer tell me that they basically are not going to build in the city limits anymore, specifically because of the EV charging ordinance. So I think it'd be beneficial for this committee to look at, what are the local costs and what might be driving building out of the city limits. Now, to be fair, there's a less and less inventory as far as land inventory within the city limits as well. So that's driving some folks out to the unincorporated area or the county. But I still think I'd like to see this group advocate for taking a look at those local costs. I mean, the last number I saw from Saba, anywhere from 26 to 28% of building new single family homes is nothing but government regulation and fees. So it strikes me that that might be a place where we could chip away at, the cost of building new housing for folks.
Yeah, I mean, I think what goes along with that in my mind also is, looking at zoning, right? I mean, we heard the study from the U of A about, what essentially there are no parcels where zoning allows for multifamily construction within the city limits of Tucson anymore. I mean, whether or not that's 100% true or not, I mean, it seems like also, the idea that, there's no or not much building going on within the city limits. I just wonder how the zoning and the available land, as you mentioned, Ben, play into that. And if that's the case, we're trying to get more housing built. I mean, that's going to be a serious roadblock. So I'm just interested in, the regulations. And I certainly hear the comments about regulation and their potential for, making it more expensive to build, but there are regulations in place for reasons as well. So there needs to be a balance there, and I'm interested to know more about that. And then also the city and the county, I think, have really done a lot in terms of trying to deal with the zoning, whether it's the I forget what it's called, looking at the corridors. Obviously, this middle housing. The change for middle housing. I'm just wondering, like, all of those things taken together, what is the impact going to be, 2, 3, 10 years down the road? And then I'll just say also, I mean, in terms of the market, I mean, I'm not a real estate agent, but I live in the Five Points area, and something has changed dramatically in the rental market. I mean, there are for rent signs everywhere now, and there were not before. So just, walking around or driving around the area I live in, I can tell something's different. I don't know if it's because, the population at the U of A has dropped. I know that's something, but whether it's, government, the cutbacks in government and people that were working here, not people leaving, that were working remotely, going back to, other bigger cities. But it seems like in the midst of the housing crisis that, there's obviously still is, the market dynamics seem to have changed quite a bit just in the past year or so. And I just wonder how that's going to impact development as well going forward. So I know those are a lot of random thoughts, but.
Yeah, just one other thing I could add. The adoption of the IECC, the International Energy Conservation Code, both Pima County and the City of Tucson adopted it. Marana, Sahuarita, and Oro Valley chose to forego adopting the 2024 code. That code alone, full compliance, adds about $6,000 to $9,000 to the cost of a single family home. So I think there are some creative things we can do. I've got high hopes for the community corridors tool. I think, Corin can maybe talk about whether that is popping or not. And then I think, Corin, also you mentioned to me before that we're finally starting to, or we're seeing some interest and some activity with the missing middle, which might, help plug a gap. And then frankly, as a fellow Tucsonan, I think Jim's comment really strikes to the heart of this, and it's beyond this commission's influence or control. But, we're in an area with, what, 18 to 20% poverty rate. And so, in my ideal world, what's affordable is anything because people are earning enough of a living to be able to, buy or rent wherever they want. So that's kind of the bigger cloud that I think has been resting over our community for, gosh, probably for decades now. So one last thing, I noticed, Mr. Chairman, that several meetings ago, one of your commission members suggested maybe bringing in a single family builder and a multifamily builder to talk to your commission about what, their experience is on the ground and maybe share some insights with you that might lead to some good conversation. So thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, no, I certainly have suggested that if other commissioners haven't. So I see.
I know a good multifamily builder.
Oh, you do? What's that builder's name, Jim?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, Ben, well, I read somewhere that rents have gone down about 5% in Tucson. Is that accurate?
I don't
I'm
know if
sorry.
5% is accurate, but they are going down, yes. Yeah, I mean they're headed in the right direction anyway. Well, not if you're an apartment manager but or owner, but certainly for the community they are headed back. You for a little while there it was, we're talking 94, 95% occupancy at most of these complexes. And now that's opened up quite a bit.
Yeah.
And is that due to more supply or people leaving the community?
I don't have an answer to that, Jim. I don't think we've built a lot of multifamily in the city limits recently. I mean, other than, you got those huge towers going in by the U of A, but I don't think those are being rented to your average community person.
I might suggest that we think about the fact that people are probably doubling up because, as somebody who works in the homelessness sector, that's what we're seeing. People, even if rents are going down, they're still far too high and people are having to double up. They have no
Yeah.
choice.
Yeah, I mean that just to me is always the elephant in the room is that whether it was 10 years ago when things were quote unquote more affordable, or it's now, or it was 30 years ago, 25% of the people that live in Tucson can't really afford day-to-day living. I mean, it's just people don't make enough money or whatever the case may be. And until, we actually take real action to give people more money one way or another, I mean, people are always going to be struggling in this community to pay rent. So I think that's an elephant in the room that, nobody's really willing to. I just don't know if we can deal with it structurally in this country. That's another story. I see your hand up, Corinne. Go ahead.
So just a couple things. I mean, Ben, you brought up a few things around zoning and regulation. So yeah, you mentioned the CCT that now does allow multifamily on every corridor, which was allowed generally previously, but just was very difficult because of our codes. And that really opens up a lot of potential along corridors for mixed use and multifamily with specific incentives for affordable housing. So we're hoping to see a lot more development using the CCT, but I think there's larger economic factors that have just made development very difficult and expensive at the moment. So we've adopted CCT in middle housing, but there's still a lot more we want to do around zoning reform. So I wanted to mention that I think Anne has mentioned before that we got a federal grant called Pro Housing last year to, it's a 5-year grant to keep working on zoning reforms and also work on how we implement some of those zoning reforms that we've put in place. So we've already put in place CCT and middle housing, but how do we really do technical assistance, partner with our community to make sure those tools are really usable? So that's kind of what we're going to be working on over the next 5 years. of that grant. And I think that's an area that we would love to collaborate with all of you and this subcommittee is like, how can we really make those tools usable? And what other tools do we need in our zoning and our regulatory toolkit to really spur more development and the type of housing that we want in Tucson? You know, how do we get more townhouses? How do we get more condos that allow that starter home ownership opportunity? Those are some of the things we want to tackle with this pro housing grant. So we would love all of your feedback on that. And then just on regulations, I just want to say it is very complex. You know, I think all of those building codes are there for a reason, for safety, and they've gone through very thorough vetting. And there is a connection between our building codes and affordability. We want high quality housing that is durable and lasting. Being on the most recent building code also directly affects people's insurance costs. So we just mentioned how insurance costs are going up for homeowners and property owners. Our city, our department gets rated every 5 years by the Insurance Standard Organization for how well we're doing implementing building safety codes. And we just went through that last year. We improved our rating last year from 5 years ago because we had more staffing. We have more highly trained building plan reviewers and inspectors than we did 5 years ago. And we're always evaluated based on are we on the most recent building code? And because we were, had done that last year, all of those things together improved our rating. That is what insurance companies look at to say, how should I look at insurance costs in this community? And they look more favorably on communities with the highest high ratings because that shows those homes, those buildings are going to be the most fire resistant, are the safest. So that directly then correlates to people's insurance levels and affordability. So just to say it's very complex how all of these things work together, every regulation and piece that is kind of part of a big network, and it's hard to isolate how any one piece affects cost.
Yeah, I think for me, this thing that goes along with that is, comparing the new suburbs with, much wealthier residents, much newer housing, to the city of Tucson, where, you basically had white flight over the years, and you've got a lot more poverty. I mean, it's just not comparing apples to apples. So, I get that it's more expensive, and I think that's an issue. But, I just think that there's a really an inequity there that is hard to wrap my head around. So, I guess that's just really a commentary. But I mean, I guess with this whole conversation though, we're just kind of going back to working on the things that we have been talking about, since day one, right? Which is, how do we get more affordable housing in here, like Jim is talking about, and those, obvious things that are preventing Tucson from getting its fair share. And then, what's the right mix of, zoning reforms, more or less regulation, just what does it take to get the right mix of things so that more things can get built here? And, obviously there are a lot of things that go into that, but, that essentially seems to me like what we're talking about. So, I mean, in the big picture of kind of what we're going to do as a subcommittee going forward, I mean, it seems to me like we have a pretty good idea of what that is. I mean, it is, I think the title we have is basically seems to capture it pretty well, which is development, right? I don't know if, in the interest of thinking about, the name of this subcommittee and, at least somewhat of a roadmap of where we go from here. To me, it seems relatively clear. I don't know what others are thinking. Are there some other things that, I mean, does it not seem clear to other folks? Is there, should we have a different name or more to the name than just, the development subcommittee? And then, again, not that we need to figure out every single thing that we want to review and talk about over the next, year or 6 months or a year. But anyway, is there anything else that folks want to kind of put on the table in terms of name, where we go from here, and then obviously the other thing we have to think about is when we want to meet.
I'd like to say something, and I apologize, but on my phone, I can't see where I can raise my hand. I think definitely more of the same. I don't know. I'm feeling a little deflated the last week or two because I just really feel that I know we did a lot of work on the unhoused community last go around, but there's going to be so much more that's going to be needed here moving into this next fiscal year with all of the impending economic downturn signs that we see everywhere. We've increased our servicing community by a ton, but there's going to be less and less money available. So more of the same. Without, with spank paying attention to the innovation piece, because we know that we're going to have to address the gaps in affordable housing and housing and shelter along the entire continuum, everything that it means. So I'd say housing innovation and development, just to keep that thought at the forefront, that we're going to have to be innovating and being creative at the same time that we continue to try to whittle away at our shortage of affordable housing along that whole continuum and all the types of housing. I know it's way more nuanced than that, but I think we're going to continue to do the same things, but I think we're going to find really in really, really short order, like what kind of crisis we're going to be in moving forward.
I love that title, Housing Innovation and Development. Any other thoughts, y'all, about things we should address and deal with? Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts. I think, Corin and Ben both brought up good points. There's things that drive costs, and there's things, Ben and I have had this discussion a bunch of times, and I've gone through and I've looked at what are all the things that are driving, why is it so expensive to build housing? And we've looked at that, and it's very expensive. There's a lot of regulation, there's a lot of taxes, but there's very few things that the city really can control. The city has very few levers that they can pull to get those costs down. And so, the thing about if we can find ways to reduce costs, that's going to help the entire housing spectrum, no question. So, there's the cost side, and then there's the sources side. And so, we need to figure out how we can get more sources of income to come to Tucson. We need to figure out how we get more money to flow down here. And for the most part, that's going to happen from outside of our community. That's not going to happen from within Tucson. It's, the county passed that, the $125 million, but then because they lost so many of the federal grants for services, it's not really going towards new development. They kind of maintain that $5 million a year, which is good. I mean, that's huge. But it's not gonna move the needle. So, I do think there are probably a few things that the city can do to reduce costs, but I did, a lot of this stuff, Ben, I think is kind of bigger than the city. A lot of it stems at the state level as well. And so I think it goes back to, let's educate, mayor and council on these are the things that we think might move the needle and generate more housing across the entire housing spectrum. And then, put the ball in their court to try to advocate for those changes at the state level.
Yeah, and I think, something that would be interesting, if we're talking about, advocating kind of, outside the city because of, like you said, the limited levers, Working with the other subcommittee, which is advocacy and communication, it seems like a good setup for the whole commission to be able to advocate. Because I do think that, there is a lot of misconception about, why there's not more affordable housing or why more housing is not getting built. So maybe amplifying some of the things that we think need to be done through the other subcommittee might be a good synergy between the two subcommittees.
Just as a, let me just make one final point on the money. So there, I don't have the exact numbers, but I know that Casa Grande, I think they've had about 1,500 units built in the last 2 years, 4% tax credits. They've had probably four times the number of units built in Casa Grande as in Tucson. And the reason is because Casa Grande can use Maricopa County incomes for their calculation. And so many units have been built. We just finished a 300 unit project in Casa Grande, and they're having trouble leasing it because it's actually been overbuilt. They've overbuilt the number of units there beyond the demand. And so there's not enough people now to fill up all of these units. So, there's something fundamentally broken with how they decide which projects get an award, and with how they're done right now. And the lion's share of the stuff is just bypassing Tucson. That's why, I would really like to focus on that because it's a new issue. Previously, the bond money was not oversubscribed. This is just the last, this has come up in the last 2 years where the bond allocation has been oversubscribed. And they've converted it to a random lottery where they literally pick names out of a hat. And that's how they decide which projects receive an award and which ones don't. And it's the dumbest process in the world. It really is. It's not a good process. And, but the reality is we're not even getting a sniff at it because projects don't pencil here. And so there's no projects really in Tucson that have been submitted in it.
One, I can't find where to put my hand up in the breakout room. One thing I want to bring up, touch piggybacking off of everything you said, Jim, and what other folks have said, including Lori, about nonprofits. One area that I think this commission can help with providing recommendations and support on. Yes, we need new units. Yes, we need to preserve what we have. And so, to Jim's point about 4%, we did. I mean, there is one 4% rehab preservation project we know is moving forward this year. And that is one of the city's public housing, 70, it's 82 units total. And I'm concerned based on the age of so many expiring LIHTC deals and where we're at, that we're going to lose massive inventory if we don't really think about preservation as well. And so that is just based on so many nonprofits. It feels like a lot of folks are coming out of the affordability period. And if they don't have an option and they need to sell, we're going to lose a ton of units.
No,
So,
and you're right. The 4% does work for rehab here.
sort
That's
of,
really
still
sort
need.
of.
Gap money, heck of gap
Yeah.
money.
It's easier to make those work in Tucson, but I was referring to our goal of 15,000 units by 2030. And if we don't get some changes to the program at the state level, we're never going to get there.
Yeah, but if we lose units, that's still gonna be
Agreed.
impossible.
Yep.
Go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, just a couple of thoughts. I know, Jim, I don't know how that goes. It's best to keep quiet and have people assume you're a fool versus opening your mouth and confirming it. But my family and I live just north of the U of A. And every day when I take my morning walk, I sometimes go by. There's an elementary school just north of Speedway that was converted to an apartment complex. And they retained the original building. It's absolutely gorgeous. And they added some units in the back. It seems like we're getting more schools being shut down, And I can't help but wonder if that might be an opportunity for some conversion. But I'm sure with some of these properties, zoning is going to be an issue because some of them are right inside neighborhoods. I mean, Jim, would you happen to know, is it more expensive to convert something like that than it would be just to build new?
Well, it depends is the politically correct answer. Sometimes, doing an adaptive reuse of a building, sometimes it can be a little bit less. I've converted two or three schools into apartment complexes, and in general, the costs run about the same, maybe a little bit higher than typical new construction.
Okay.
I
And
think the
this.
difference could be the land. I mean, if you get the land really cheap, or you get the property cheap, or things like that, then that might be what helps kind of get it done for less.
Okay. And then my second thought, I know the AMA, we've been lobbying very actively to try and get LIHTC reactivated and brought back at the very least and get started in the rural county. So it might be worth, again, I don't know if this would be a task for the advocacy group, but our legislative delegation does not swing a very big stick at the legislature, but there are allies out there. And I'm wondering if maybe once a year, this group, our group, some of the other groups should look at legislation at the state level that we can agree on and throw all of our hats on the ring together, because I think it might help turn some votes if folks see, okay, wow, here's the city of Tucson, here's some nonprofits, here's private sector developers all coming in on the same page on this thing. So maybe we should take a closer look at it. So I just don't know that all of us are talking to each other, frankly.
The state of New Mexico just passed a law that allows a sales tax waiver on affordable housing projects. So if the state of Arizona would do something like that, that would make a huge difference. I think that would get projects across the finish line here.
All right, y'all. So back to our marching orders for this afternoon. I would say that unless there's objection or we want to edit the name of the group. So far, we have Housing Innovation and Development as the name of the subcommittee. Does that work for everyone? Anybody have any objection, anything to add to that? Okay, so check that off. We've got that taken care of. And then we need a chair. And I who would does anybody want to be the chair? I do not want to be the chair. I will just put that out there. Does anybody want to be the chair of the subcommittee?
I would prefer not to, if for the simple reason that this next year is going to be pretty rough for the construction company, and I kind of have to focus on that and figure out how we can keep our pipeline full. It's not that I would be opposed to it, but I think this next year is going to be pretty rough for us.
Yeah, and being the chair of the full commission and having, done the other subcommittee from the get-go, I would like to take a step back. I would love to see some other folks step up and take some leadership and on the commission as well. So, here's looking at the rest of you. Anybody willing to chair the subcommittee?
I say we assign it to the absent people.
What about you, Maggie? Would you be willing to chair?
No, I think I have my hands full right now with just kind of like what Jim is doing, trying to make sure we're afloat this coming year. Grants are not a coming.
So that leaves Serena, Lori, and Tisha, from what I can see, at least who's here today.
Jay, could you like quickly summarize the responsibilities of the chair?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I would say it's really the organizing and logistics, working on an agenda for the meeting, making sure that folks show up and that, you're there to lead it. And then, at least my experience is just kind of trying to get the group on the same page and discussing, and then making decisions. I know that's kind of vague. I don't. That's maybe not the best description. Jim, what would you say?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most difficult thing is getting the agenda set, making sure that there's focus on the group, focus for the meeting. I think there's a little bit of coordination in terms of setting meeting times and things like that, but it's basically getting the agenda in line, and is probably the most complicated part of it.
Yeah, and I can say something, Jay. So I just got done chairing the other Housing First subcommittee, and the most time consuming thing is just trying to get people to show up. It's not a whole, it's not like putting the agenda together for this larger meeting, and it's whatever you make of it. But yeah, no, same. I ditto everything that said that they can't share and the reasons why.
Yep. Serena, are you up for it?
Yeah, I'm up for it.
There you go. We check box number two. Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
Serena, if you need help, give me a call. I don't mind chipping in and helping with that. If you need help
Thank
with
you.
agenda items, okay.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah, ditto. I think if you have any issues, any of us would be willing to help you. I know I certainly would be as well. So I echo what Jim says. So
We can
that's great.
provide some support on the HCD side as well.
Nice.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess the other thing I would say about, doing any of this is, like, you can only do as much as there is energy from the other people that you're working with. So if people aren't, showing up to the subcommittees, there's not a whole lot you can do. So, having led a lot of these, it's hard to predict that. Sometimes there seems to be good energy and people are showing up and things are rolling, and then you hit a patch and you're like, where'd everybody go? And I have not been able to really solve that problem, but it just seems to kind of be the nature of these committees and commissions as far as I'm concerned. So the third thing I think that we need to address is when we would like to meet. So we want to meet monthly. The meetings have historically been an hour and a half long. And yeah, we just kind of need to find a time that, at least at the moment, seems to work for more people than not. So I don't know the best way to start that. I know for me, afternoons are typically better. I think we had this, Equitable Housing Solutions met from 1 to 1, I mean 1 to 2:30, if I recall correctly, and we always went back and forth for whatever reason. We tried to switch to Thursday, but always ended up on Tuesday. So I think that we ended up wanting to meet on Thursday, if I recall correctly. So that's when it was, that we could start there. I don't, unless folks have a want to throw some other times out there.
For me, usually this like 4 p.m., 5 p.m. time works the best with no preference on the day.
That typically would work for me as well.
What do you guys think about the second or the third Tuesday of the month? So the CEHD meeting is the first Thursday. So if we did it on the second Tuesday, it would be 5 days later. If we did it on the third Tuesday, it would be a week and a half later.
I just want to say that after work times are really difficult for me because I already have a lot of commitments at my job, board meetings, board committees, things like that. So late meetings are not my preference, though I can try to make that work, but I'm usually really consistent about showing up, and I will not be if it's from 4 to 6 or 4 to 5:30.
What would be the latest that would be good for you, Lori? What time?
Maybe 5, so that when I have other commitments, I can make it to those.
So like 3:30 to 5 would be the latest that you would be that would work for you. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I don't want people to work around my schedule, but I just wanted to put that out there that, some of us work a full day from 7:30, 8 o'clock, and then having meetings till 6 can be challenging when it's frequent.
3:30 to 5 works well for me too. So,
What about, I know this is may sound horrible to some of you, but what about a lunch meeting?
I would be fine with that.
yeah, I could typically do lunch as well. Like, what you're talking like 12, 12:30, 11:30, 12, 12:30, something like that,
Yeah,
starting.
exactly. Yep. That would work great for me too, because I do have a hard time juggling those these times with some of my late meetings also.
On what day of the week?
I think you said Tuesday, right, Jim?
Tuesday's fine.
Tuesday.
So like noon, the second Tuesday.
That would typically work for me.
That would be fantastic. And
So
then I,
we want to
if
do
you,
it 5 days after the regular meeting, or do we do a week and a half after?
I think personally, I think 5 days after would be better, using the momentum from the larger meeting, but
That's what I was thinking.
Okay.
So, do we want to go with the second Tuesday of the month at noon? Is that what we said?
sounds good.
Who did we? Maggie, I don't think we heard from you about. Does that time? Can you make that time work? Sometimes more or less.
Yes. I was looking at my calendar and then I couldn't get back to you guys, but yes, that works.
Cool. Okay, I think we have checked all of our boxes. Am I missing anything, y'all? That we needed to do?
Good discussion. Thank you all for your insights. Jim, in particular, I think, you said some things there that we could definitely weigh in on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, agreed.
Can I just double check? You said noon.
Is that's what we landed on, right?
Yeah,
Am I correct?
that's fine with me. I just wanted to make sure. Yeah.
No, I want to double check as well that that's what we said. That's what I thought I heard, but I don't always remember correctly. So I think we said noon to 1:30 on the second Tuesday of the month.
When would be our first meeting?
The 7th.
I will not be able to make that one because I have a special commitment that day, but it's not a normal thing. So please move ahead and I will be at the next one.
April, is it April 7th? April 14th would be the second Tuesday, I believe. Right? That's what
Oh,
I'm
is that
saying.
right? Oh, yeah, you're right.
Oh. Then I'm good.
But I'm gone. I'm on vacation.
Yeah, I just want to know with open meeting law, the 7th might be a little bit challenging to swing with getting agendas up and info published early enough. If it's possible for this first one to move it out to the 14th or 21st, that would be, I mean, I think we can do this the second Tuesday normally, but with this little notice, that gets a little tricky for publishing.
Yeah, and the 14th, I think, is as Maggie, I think Maggie pointed out, is the second Tuesday. So,
Oh, sorry. Yes, wasn't tracking that. My bad. We're good.
That's where I was too. I was like, yeah. So anyway, yeah, I guess that would be the 14th. Unless, of course, we wanted to wait until May, but I don't see any reason to do that if we can get some folks here. Okay. I think we're good, you guys. I don't I, unless I'm missing something. Ben, is there something else that we were supposed to do in our breakout?
Think we've got a name, we've refined the scope, got a meeting time, and we've got a chair. I think those are the key pieces. Yeah, I think we covered it.
Awesome. Great work, everybody. That was a great conversation and relatively painless for everything else. So appreciate that. Thanks, Serena, for stepping up and agreeing to chair the subcommittee. That is a huge help. And I think with that, I guess we can all kind of leave the room at this point. Yeah, go back to the main meeting.
Yeah,
Thank you.
that sounds good. Do you all have a button to do that, or should I move people back?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Leave room.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
How do we leave the room?
Yeah, I think we're in the main room now.
The
But
leave. The leave. Hit the
leave.
leave.
Oh, leave. Leave breakout room.